CliffCentral.com.
Domestic work is one of those many awkward areas where South Africa is considered the special child in the global community. But how weird is domestic work in South Africa really? And if an alien arrived from outer space, what would they think? Luckily, we have an alien in the building. She's called Ruth. She's not from outer space, but she is a global citizen. Her family is originally Jewish, South African, but she was born and raised in the UK. She's also lived everywhere from Seattle to Italy to South Africa to Dar es Salaam. And since I've known her, she's talked my ear off about how bizarre she finds domestic work in South Africa. So, we thought it would be really refreshing to get the observations of an exceptionally well-traveled non-South African as a sort of check and balance to our often very insular view of things. Incidentally, she's also the very first white person we've had on the show so far. So mazel tov. Anyway, welcome, friend.
Thank you. Hello.
What's your story? Where do you come from? Where have you been? And what brings you to South Africa?
Ish. Okay. Well, my name is Ruth. I was born in Stockport. It's a very industrial working class town. My parents were originally from here, but sort of had a very interesting, I guess, connection with that, because we was very taboo. We never talked about it. I think we've only found out very late.
South Africa was taboo, huh?
Yeah, very
taboo.
Can
you talk a bit to that?
I think when they left, so I was born in 89, they must have left in around 86, and I think being a white South African abroad was just not cool.
Oh, I see.
So you didn't want to broadcast that. But we grew up we didn't grow up like that at all. I mean, we grew up in the midst of council estate Northern England. So, like, you know, had my mates in the hood and tried to play football in the streets and whatever. We're part of the Jewish community there, so we were in Jewish schools, and, you know, just a very eclectic group of people, really, because you were all sort of immigrants from somewhere, but families going back to the UK for a long time. So that was how I grew up. Then my dad got this opportunity to move to the States, so we went to Los Angeles, which was, at the time, which was about 98, was a culture shock of note.
Wow.
So that was crazy. I didn't know, my family hated it, and we stayed there for, I think, 8 months, and then my mom was like, if you don't sort something out, I'm taking the kids and we're going back to England. So they moved up to Seattle, which is where my dad got into tech and where everything sort of started to take off, and they still live there.
Very interesting transitions, eh?
Yeah, very interesting. There was an opportunity to go to France and for work, and then that didn't happen, but my school had this program that they were running where there was like an exchange, and so I ended up going there. So I went to for summer of high school in the northwest of France, which was also a really, I mean, it was a great experience. And then went to university. So the school that I went to, Brandeis University, has this really amazing degree program where you can cycle through different countries with your degree. So that was really important to me, because I always felt very conflicted about living in the US. I really didn't like it. And I always basically wanted to go to where I conceptualized home of, which was the UK. I was lucky enough to go to this university that had the opportunities to go and study at the London School of Economics and then in Italy as well. What happened was I essentially had two job opportunities when I left university. One was to the work that I ended up coming to Johannesburg to do, and the other was working in refugee camps on the Thai border with Myanmar. And I had this conversation with my parents. I was like, listen, I've worked all through university. I've got money to do what I want to do. I'm leaving. And they said, great, please don't go to Myanmar, Somalia, or Afghanistan.
What has struck you as really weird about domestic work in South Africa?
Everything. Dude, it's really weird. Like, it's really, really weird. A lot. I think when I first came here, in my house at home, or in home, be in the UK.
What is home home?
Can we not talk about that?
Are you still discovering it?
I don't know the answer to that question. Where my parents live.
Yeah.
Whichever country that was in, and actually anywhere I've lived, people do not have maids, right? If you have maids, you're Bill Gates, right? People don't have maids.
So it is. Oh, it's a luxury, wow. Right?
Yeah, so you hire a cleaner, right? But your cleaner comes once every other week, and she cleans. She doesn't do all the other stuff. Definitely doesn't
do your washing. Like raise your kids.
Okay.
So you're saying it's an incredibly intimate relationship here.
I don't even think it's that intimate, though. That's what weirded me out about it, right? Uh-huh. Like, you don't... Nobody makes your bed. Like, you make your bed. You right. do your washing. You unstack the dishwasher. You do the dishes. The cleaner comes and will clean the house. So, like, she'll wash all the windows and vacuum and dust and all that stuff. And that, like, not everybody does that. It costs money. It's a living wage. It's above minimum wage.
Is this both the UK and the US?
Yeah, man. Okay. Like, people don't just have maids.
Are they contracted to a company?
Sometimes they do it on their own. Like, I mean... You don't just have somebody who like comes and stays over at your house. Like, it's very strange.
Oh, right.
There's no uniform. It's very strange. I think that it's like, and even when people have, and we would call them housekeepers, we wouldn't call them maids. Like, even when you have a housekeeper, like, you know, very wealthy people often will, right? The housekeeper has very specific tasks. So usually you'll have a housekeeper who, I don't know anybody who had a housekeeper, but my perception from, like, reading articles and movies is that, like, you know, this person will prepare food and will clean and whatever, but this person, maybe if it's some kind of hybrid thing, like, for example, the nannies in New York, like, they take care of the kids.
Right.
They do not then also do the house.
Okay, so there's a separation of roles.
Yeah, and you also, it's like very much, like if you're a nanny, like, you know, I was been a nanny for kids before, you know, you bond with the kids, but it's a professional relationship with the parents. Like, you're not in their lives. When I came here, I mean, the first thing that was very, very weird for me was that I was at my aunt's house, and it was her maid, and it was strange because she'd been there for so long, right? So it was like she'd been there since the kids were born and whatever, and their relationship was not how I would expect somebody who sort of, you know, you'd grown up with being that kind of relationship. It was much sort of more distant than that. It was like quite cold. And this woman was a go-go. And for me to have a go-go come and like...
Go-go. I was wondering what that was.
Thank you for
saying that. Sorry. I've got you back.
To have someone who's that much older than you come and try and take your washing. I mean, I actually had an argument with her first. I was like, no.
Yeah, she literally had to pry the laundry out.
No.
Her cold dead hands.
I'm like, no, this is not... What? And nobody gives you a brief about that when you come here. It's just like...
Yeah.
And then after that, there was backlash from your aunt.
Right. Then my aunt was like, no, you need to do this. If you want, you can tip her. And then I'm like, well, why can't I do my own laundry? Like, how much do I pay extra for that? Like, it was just very strange. It was like a very strange conversation generally. And then what I found really weird the longer I've been here is that there's like this total reliance, but... they're not part of the family, and there's this, like, people know that they have their own families, but there's no integration into their family. Like, it was just, it was very strange.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I found really
very unilateral.
Yeah, the other thing I find really, really weird about it is that I can't say that my viewpoint is representative, but my experiences of this is that when it's a white family and when it's a black family, the relationship is really different.
Mm.
So, for example, and it's for most people who do services for you. So, again, I live with a black man, and somebody came to, they wanted to, like, fix a light, I don't know, so the landlord had sent someone over. And when I opened the door, he called me madam, which is very weird. And he's like, what? And then when my boyfriend came out, he called him... I think called him Otembo. And I was like, why do you get Otembo? And I get mad. I'm like, that's so weird. And so I asked him, like, when, because his mom had, you know, people who helped them in the house. And I was like, well, what did they call you? And they called me by my name. I'm like, what did they call your mom? Like, they called her mom whatever. You know, like, why?
Yeah, you see, and very this is strange. The thing that I think can happen, and this is why I'm really inclined to empathize, and probably prematurely, with people who are historically privileged, or who represent people who are historically privileged, because I think, like, you know, what you're describing to me is a madam complex, which I would have if I was you. And I've probably had a lot of the time as well. I mean, I've never been called madam, but, you know, I get incredibly uncomfortable when a cleaner or domestic worker will treat me like I'm superior in any way because of my perceived position versus theirs. And so, you know, I worry. I'm really, like, I guess I'm very sad for particularly the, you know, the whites and the madams who are actually very evolved. And I, you know, like I said, maybe it's premature. But I think if you're evolved and you're an early adopter of equality, that sometimes you get a lot of, I don't know if it's fair or unfair, but, like, difficult backlash.
I mean, listen, I think what's weird about it is that if you asked anyone to come and provide a service for you at any other time, it's business related, right? So, for example, then there are models of that in this country. I mean, we use an app, which this is going to sound like a total plug, but it's really great. It's called Sweep South, and essentially it's like Uber, but it's for cleaners. And somebody comes to your house in their own clothes, right? And they clean your house, just clean the house, uh-huh. And then they leave. And the company pays them.
What are the sort of rates in relation to a live-in domestic worker?
Well, they charge, I think, I've never had a live-in domestic worker. I have no idea what that costs. I've heard some pretty nasty conversations about that, but I understand that it ranges based on the family. This pays by the hour. If I remember correctly, I think it's 50 to 70 rand based on the service per hour. That's and then they have a minimum hour. So I think it's 4 hours. They always so when you like sign up for the app, they say, okay, we estimate 5 hours per house, and you can say, oh, actually my house is really small, so my boat's really big.
What would it take to have that as a status quo if it's so much easier to get a live-in one that's there 24/7 and will do a lot more and you pay a lot less?
Well, I think it depends on what you want, isn't it? Like, I'm not out there looking for somebody who's going to cook my meals, do my ironing, rearrange my fridge.
I think that's going to be a millennial thing. I'll explain why just now. Okay, but, go ahead.
Like, I think when I see the types of things that maids, domestic workers do in, you know, houses where they work, and the level of reliance, I mean, that's not appable, right? They are looking for somebody who's going to come and just take care of all of your stuff, right? Yeah. I'm looking for somebody who's going to clean my house. That's what I want.
It does. It becomes a very hairy relationship. And I think as millennials, what we try to avoid more and more is strings and commitment. And so I suspect that the less committal we become as people, the more we just want to rent an Uber. And, you know, we don't necessarily want to buy property and we want to rent. We maybe want to rent an iPhone because actually we know that, you know, in 6 months it's going to be outdated, and we're less and less committal and we travel more and all of these things. I think with that, and it seems that our society is moving progressively in that direction, that we're going to have to restructure this entire role of domestic worker.
Yeah, but I think that, I mean, that's much more normal.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, I think that the way that it is now is a relic of a time where there was
relic
massive
is the
inequality.
Right word.
Well, what I'm wondering is if it was more affordable in Britain, do you think this model would happen there, or do you think you're too conditioned already to not need that much aid from someone else?
I mean, that's a great question. I think this type of thing happens where labor's cheap. I mean, it happens in India, happens in Tanzania where we lived. Like, if you don't have to be held to a minimum wage, it would happen, I'm sure. But in those places, I mean, where my parents live, the minimum wage is $15 an hour.
Yeah.
My mom's like, I can't afford somebody to be in the house 24 hours a day for $15 an hour.
Yeah.
That's every day they're making upwards of $200, right?
Okay. What do you think this says about South African society? So what clues can it give you not specifically in terms of this industry, but about the broader society?
There's massive inequality, and there's not enough social policies to support people where they need to be supported. The fact that there's no minimum wage as a standard cross-industry is appalling.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
I say that as a foreigner. Like, it's appalling. That is shocking. It's shocking.
Mm. What about South Africans as people? What do you think it says about us sociologically?
I think that there's a mindset that's in place in this country that has come from the past. It's very colonial, and I think you can see it in everywhere where there's been colonies and it has not evolved out of that, right? So, you know, and again, it's where labor is cheap. It's a dependency that is outdated, right? So as soon as you, like you're talking about, as soon as you're in a position socially where you can do things like move around and travel and whatever, why are you going to need a maid?
Mm. What interesting observations have you made about the position of working class African women across the continent?
My job takes me to a lot, speaking with a lot of women, adolescent girls and women, and particularly adolescent girls.
Can stories you just,
are harrowing.
Can you just briefly explain what you
do? What
job
do
is?
I do?
Yeah.
I work with Care Canada through Care International, and we work on a project that is trying to increase financial inclusion. So it essentially rolls out products, partnering with banks, so M-Pesa type things, and tries to engage and integrate informal economies with formal economies. Mm. And we work, that's sort of a two-sided process. One is working in communities through village saving groups, which are mostly made up of women, and they sort of form a proxy bank among themselves and build collateral for credit that they then loan out to each other. They receive a bunch of trainings, they start their own businesses, because most of them are starting businesses anyways.
Cool.
But now they have access to a loan fund,
right.
Build collateral. And then on the other hand, we work with banks to develop products that are most appropriate for this type of community, because the business case for that is in the African continent, the majority of your market is actually peri-urban or rural without banking experience. So if you can bank those people, you'll make a lot more money than just focusing on the urban centers.
Sure.
So, but that requires a certain amount of dynamism. It requires partnering with mobile network operators. It requires a lot of different things. So we work to facilitate that partnership.
Okay, cool. And this speaks a lot, I think, to, you know, how invaluable working class Africans are to, you know, the greater economy. You know, this idea of focusing on banking.
Well, they are the economy in Africa.
Yeah, and I don't think
I love that you say that.
You have a lot of people that you're supporting with one income generating activity. Also, I think the level of responsibility is very high. So what I see all the time, especially with girls, right, is that you had your first baby at 14, you had your second baby at 16, you're a 17-year-old mother of two, but all of the money that you get, and you're probably also in the communities that we work in, you're also supporting your brothers and sisters, you're the only one who's earning regularly, all the money that you get goes towards three key things. One is the education of your children and your siblings, your younger siblings. The second is food. And the third is growing your business, right? Mm. So there's a huge proportion of people. It's about how can I grow more? And I think that's the difference between that and domestic worker situation in South Africa is that I don't think the growth mentality is as present there.
What is the unique value, both existing value and potential value, that domestic workers in South Africa have economically or socioeconomically?
I think that any group that's able to coexist has a tremendous social value. So if you look at, for example, the way young children are with their domestic worker, that's a very, if you can bottle that kind of empathy and caring you know, we could all drink that and things would be really wonderful.
That sounds mental, yes.
And I think that's a really important
that's
role.
Very important, first and foremost.
But there's also a negative side to that, which is that while you're looking after someone else's children, who's looking after your children?
Sure.
And I think the dissolution of the family unit is a huge issue, right? Mm. Which is a conversation for another day. Mm. But the domestic worker is also sort of filling a role that allows that dissolution on both ends. People with domestic workers not raising their kids, domestic workers not raising their kids. That's a huge problem. Mm. But I think the capacity to move in and out of people's spaces is a huge strength that not very many people, groups of people have. Where I see that being a problem is that it seems to me, from an observer's standpoint, that at a certain age, that kind of fluidity evaporates because the kids get too old. Mm. So it's sort of like you have this amazing opportunity to impact young upper-class children. The challenge to that is that their environment sort of reverses that when they get older. But like, it's young kids are amazing for that reason. So other than that, socially, economically, I mean, what I would call blue collar work props up any economy, right? So people are always going to pay for that. Growing that in a way that's sustainable and socially sustainable is a very crucial caveat. Mm. But that actually, I think, has to come from government. Things like a working wage, not having some sort of weird negotiation with your employer about how much you should be paid. If that was to happen, right, say hypothetically blue sky situation, you were to say, okay, minimum wage for a domestic worker is 100 rand an hour. Then I think you start to see a very different thing happen, which is that it gets formalized, which is important. It becomes workable. It becomes less something that you have to do, but something that, you know, you do, right? It's a job. And then you'll start to see the constructs of that change as well. If it becomes 100 rand an hour, you can no longer afford to have a poor woman there who's going to do everything for you. Now you have to do like a sweeps out situation.
Yeah.
So is our middle class going to collapse?
No, God, no. I mean, you can pay for Uber, can't you? Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same thing. And I actually think that if that were to happen, you'd fulfill a very... another problem that South Africa has around immigrants, right, which is that undocumented workers, if this economy was structured in a way that makes sense, right, or the way that it does in other parts of the world, what you'd have is a pyramid, right, where at the top you have highly educated people doing white collar jobs, and then you have people who have to be skilled, but like skilled through colleges, you know, plumbers, electricians, stuff like that. Then you have service industry. Then you have blue collar jobs. And then you have undocumented work. So if you have like a South African woman, she should be getting paid a South African living wage, right? The fact that that doesn't exist means that she's in the same boat as people who are coming into this country at an undocumented standpoint. That fuels a lot of the anger that's happening, right?
Yeah.
So if it was structured in a way, or it was, you know, done in like a sweep south style, where if you have a visa here, you get 100 rand an hour in any job you do, minimum, then you'd see a different shift, right? And there would be market for people to come in from Mozambique and Zimbabwe and whatever. They're undocumented. I'm sure that's not going to change anytime soon. This country is a nightmare from an immigration standpoint, I remember from my own experiences.
Yeah.
But then there's a market for them, right? And then
so you're saying that, you know, there is a role for undocumented work?
I don't think there should be. I think everybody should have a minimum wage, but, like, that's not going to change anytime soon in this country, right?
Right.
And, yeah, that's usually how it works in other places, right? Yeah, if you come in with a visa, it's
In an ideal world, we would perfectly regulate even, you know, the immigration space, right?
Sure, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's definitely not going to happen. But saying at least if we can alleviate the local workers from the undocumented load, we can begin to accommodate.
Well, I think what's happening is that things are jumbled, right? So you're saying... Cool. And it feeds into everything. If there's a livable minimum wage, you can earn enough money to send your kid to school. Never mind send your kid to school, the kid can go to university. Goes to university, he jumps, right? His social capital increases, he goes to the next level. So if while you were a blue-collar worker, your child can be a service delivery person and work in a hotel or whatever. It doesn't matter. And then their generation, they get paid more, jumps up. That is how, you know, movement happens, right? Mm. So when that's the case, suddenly you have South Africans who, by and large, form the middle class, right? Mm. As opposed to now, arguably in a lot of places in this country, there is no middle class, right? Mm. It's just the top and the bottom and nothing in between.
Yeah.
And that's how middle classes form, right? Is that you have people, for history, right? People started working menial jobs. They, through pay, through work, whatever, acquired skills that allowed them to move to the next thing, right? And then they grow their businesses from there.
Mm.
And then the middle class forms. You need a middle class that's comprised of the people that live in this country, which is black South Africans, yeah. right? And after you've achieved that, you can start to look at, okay, what's going on at either end of the spectrum? But the major problem is that there's nothing in the middle right now, right. and all economies are built on the middle class.
That's interesting. It's a myth, this middle class, eh? Mm. Who knew?
I mean, it's there.
There's three of them, and we're yeah. holding on to them. Where have you seen the domestic worker employer dynamic work best? In which country have you seen that work best?
I think anywhere people get paid properly. It's when it's a formalized relationship, like when it's, I mean, I guess it depends what you mean by domestic worker, right? Like when I grew up, it worked great, right? You pay someone $400 a week and they clean your house twice a week, not twice a week, every other week.
I also just love how flirt this domestic worker title is.
Yeah,
because you've spoken about housekeeper, nanny in other parts of the world, yeah. right? And actually, I don't recall ever hearing anyone non-South African use the word domestic worker.
It's true.
Because it's so, and we use it because it is so fluid. It can be anything from just cleaning,
mm.
just looking after kids, both, and maybe occasionally gardening. And, you know, being a security guard.
You would not have that. I think that's when it works best, is you have a gardener who you pay a fair wage to come and do your garden. And he doesn't do, like, none of this happens on a daily basis, right, because it's too expensive.
Mm.
So you need labor costs to be high enough that you can have a relationship where there's integrity. There's not integrity with the domestic workers, but in sort of paying somebody 3,000 rand a month or whatever it is to do everything, you are removing the
But isn't it funny that we're using this title domestic worker as an alternative to something historically derogatory, like maid, for instance, right? People take issue with. But no one, because domestic worker sounds such a professional title, no one's actually bothered to interrogate, you know, the inherent, what inherent injustice it can have.
Because to be honest, I'm more uncomfortable with domestic worker.
Interesting.
But everyone tells me that maid is bad. So it's a very strange
helper,
thing.
Helper, maid, domestic worker.
I yeah, know, I think guys, helper.
Guys, it's work, okay?
It's all work. Helper. It's true.
But how do we get to a stage as a country where we can start discussing a minimum wage at a stage where it is implementable?
Practically?
Mm.
Practically, you have to be able to have a population that pays enough taxes. That's how these things happen, right? Like you pay taxes. So the minimum wage in the UK is much higher than the US. And the reason for that is because people pay higher taxes.
Yeah.
Because they pay higher taxes, you have all these other services available to you, like free healthcare, free education, free transport, da-da-da-da-da. Right? That's only doable because people are paying taxes. I mean, SARS in this country doesn't collect taxes from most people. And when they do collect taxes, it's disproportionate.
But no one is in it for the long game, particularly taxpayers. And maybe that's part of the problem. And it's difficult to be in it for the long game when you're trying to survive day to day.
But this is the thing. You cannot have a reliable tax system that provides services if A, there's corruption in your government like there is here,
yeah.
and B, people don't earn enough to pay enough taxes.
Yeah.
So if the average wage here is 12,000 rand a month, that's not enough, right? Because what are you taxing from that? A fair tax amount, or even a high tax amount would be, I don't know, say 2,000 rand. 2,000 rand is not enough, even if you got it from every single person, to provide enough services to have a high enough minimum wage. You need people that are in the middle class and in the upper class that can pay higher tax amounts.
Don't we have enough money in the upper class to carry that weight?
Yeah, you do, but I think that speaks to the corruption, right? I mean, people are in bed with each other all over the place. And the reason they're not asking them to pay higher taxes is because they're profiting off of the back of that, right?
No, it's true. And I think, you know,
And you also cannot expect, so this is actually another economic principle, right? You cannot ask, so the UK did this in the 1980s. They asked the upper class to pay exorbitant amount of tax. I think it was 50%. 50% tax rate if you earned over a certain bracket, they left. Why are they going to stay if they're paying 50% of their salary in tax? Yeah. If you ask anyone to do that, they're going to leave.
But it's exactly what I'm saying. No one's in it for the long game, and it's largely, well, you know, there's these bottlenecks like corruption in government. If we had, like, uber-efficient governments, then maybe people would be in it for the long game because they can see how that 50% would have a direct benefit to their standard of living, their quality of life, the future that their children have. But because it takes so long, you know, it might be impact, they're paying tax today, but it might be impact that, you know, will only come to fruition long after they're gone.
Yeah.
If ever, if it doesn't get caught up in government corruption.
But isn't it also that the country gave the government these 20 years to implement things where we'd start seeing the benefits of that now?
Not enough time.
Yes, no, I agree. 20 years is definitely not enough time, but at the same time, we're still not talking about the 50% tax and seeing those returns.
Yeah.
You know, those things aren't in place, so we literally sometimes feel like we're still at the very, very beginning.
Your economy is held hostage in this country. If you're talking about, like, the wealthy people in this country, well, most of them left in 94, right? Mm. But they left because, like, a lot, I mean, they left because, like, oh, the country's gone to shit. But it's also because I'm sure they knew, like, who's going to be bankrolling this. They said, not me.
Hmm. Look at that. We could have even more white capital to redistribute.
Damn it.
If only we found the incentive. No, again, joke. joke. That's definitely not the right idea. From our lovely guest, good Lord, woman, what a conversation. Any last words from you?
I think I've said enough.
Any final comments?
I've said a lot.
Yeah?
I've commented out.
Cool. Thank you for joining us, as always, on the Made Sessions with Cliff Central. What an amazing conversation.
I just quickly want to thank Ruth, and to be honest, I think I only got about 2% of what you were saying. You've thrown so much information at us. It's crazy. I think I'm going to listen to the show about 25 times
and
before I actually really get what you were saying to us.
I'm really sorry, because I think it's like 2.5 hours long.
But really, thank you so much for your insights. So please make sure to follow us on Twitter. It's at Made Project, M-A-I-D-E Project. And also make sure to follow our Facebook page, which is simply The Made Sessions, M-A-I-D-E, as well.
Cliff Central. The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.